Welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I am here with my good buddy, Martin Funny Dude Willis.
Oh, God. You know, I think we've said this before, but I...
Funny Dude?
I absolutely have no idea what you're going to say.
Yeah.
Before you say it. And vice versa, I don't think you know either.
A lot of times I don't. So you can hear a pause at the beginning often because my brain is formulating something, and so those gears are, you know, the mucked up gears in my brain are kind of spitting something out, and that's what comes out, you know, just like those old computers where the paper comes out, that's the little paper comes out, and that's what it is. Funny guy, because you were making me laugh before the show here.
Yeah, well, thank you. With the awkward...
And we're geeks. Pauses. We're UFO geeks. And like I always talk about, geeks invented awkward. And awkward is cool. And geeks own it, you know?
Yeah, it was going to come around eventually. And, you know, by golly, I'm glad it has.
And you know how I'm an official authority on geekdom. You know why? You know why.
I know why.
But I'll tell the audience. Because I am now officially a writer for Den of Geek. Bum, bum, bum. And people are like, what's up? I've never heard of Den of Geek. And maybe you haven't, but probably a lot of you into sci-fi have, because it's a very, very popular geek site that mostly covers entertainment and, of course, sci-fi and all of that cool type of stuff. But they also want to cover more UFOs and more space science. And as some of you may know, I've been writing space science stuff for the last few years. And I've been able to go to, you know, NASA facilities and interview astronauts and stuff. In fact, tomorrow I head to Minnesota to speak to Scott Kelly. 3M is inviting me and some other press people to show us kind of some of the science they're doing. And the keynote.
The astronaut?
Yeah, the astronaut who spent a year in space, and I'm going to get some one-on-one time with him.
He's like the second, I don't know how many people have spent extended periods of
the
time,
most.
But he's... Well, wasn't there a woman that spent like 600 days or something
She's
like that?
Combined, cumulative, 600 days.
So his was in a stretch, the longest.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And it was essentially to study the effects on his body. So it's very interesting stuff. So I'm super excited. And you know what? I'm going to... Shh. Don't tell anybody. I'm going to try to slip in a question about aliens and UFOs. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm going to do it. So
I hope you do.
And my guest, I told my guest for the show today this, that I was going to do this, and he gave me some great suggestions on kind of, if he seems kind of sketchy, you know, he might not want to go there, how to ease him into it, which is a great idea. So I'm going to make it happen. So assuming they don't cancel and he can't do his one-on-ones with us, but they've already got it scheduled, so it should be good. So I'm super excited about that. My story on Den of Geek, the very first one, should be posted at any moment now. It is about the rekindling of the space race. And if you're like, well, what do you mean? How do you know that? And it's because Harrison Schmitt told me so. And Harrison Schmitt was one of the last men to walk on the moon. He was part of Apollo 17. And I asked him about this question, and he told me. But I also have a lot of other information that demonstrates, you know, how and why we've gotten here to this brand new space race to the moon.
Great. Wow. I can't wait. And also, I can't wait for your interview. I hope he doesn't, you know, dodge the question if you actually get to ask him that.
He may, but we'll see. And I don't want to put him in an awkward position, and I don't want him to say anything he doesn't want to say, because I know sometimes they're a little skeptical, or they're a little worried to go there. But I've asked other people about it, and I've written about that, other astronauts. So a lot of time they have fun with the topic. They like to talk about it. And it's a different world after December and the New York Times story. Right. And yep. That's a lot of the subject of my interview. So I should get to my guest. My guest is the wonderful Bryce Zabel.
All right.
So, and I've had him on before, in fact, not long ago, but that was before the conference, and I had him now because he was actually on Coast to Coast for just a few minutes. I thought he was going to be on all night, but I guess it was just a few minutes. And that's not necessarily why I had him on, although we do talk about this, because you and I talked about this last week, how created and wrote this series called Dark Skies for NBC, and Art Bell played a cameo. So we discussed that, which was a lot of fun, how that came about and all that sort of thing. And but I also talked to Bryce about the New York Times article, essentially, because Bryce wrote a book with Richard Dolan called AD, After Disclosure. So I wanted to talk to him, you know, are we in a kind of a little bit of an after disclosure world? And you know, given the thought he and Richard put towards the book, his insights regarding this. And it's a fun conversation, very interesting conversation. And he was wonderful. He was a great guest, as always. So very excited for the show today.
Right. One of my favorites, Bryce's. So highly intelligent. And yet, a super nice guy.
He is, and he's big time Hollywood.
Right.
If you go to his Facebook, he's hanging out with stars and everything all the time.
Right. Amazing.
Amazing.
And down to earth, as I say.
Very down to earth. You're exactly right about that.
Mm-hmm.
As you are about many things, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
But getting to the news. So UFO news, that's what you're here for, buddy, is to talk about some UFO news. And before the show, you talked about, well, really, there isn't any UFO news this week. And there's not a lot, but did you find something?
Well, I thought I would talk about, it's more, you know, like the possibility of searching for extraterrestrial life.
That's
so
good.
Not really about UFOs, but anyway, it's about hypersaline lakes that could help for the search of extraterrestrial life. And it's a group of international researchers have discovered what they believe to be the first isolated hypersaline subglacial lake in the world. And this was a new study published in the Journal of Science Advances Reports. And the team came upon these strange formations, which sit between 1,800 and 2,500 feet beneath the Devon ice cap in Canada. After looking at airborne radar, it's great with this new technology that was acquired by NASA and the University of Texas Institute of Geophysics to analyze the bedrock conditions below the cap. Pardon me. They weren't actually looking for subglacial lakes, but there they were. And this is really something, because they're down below the ice and they're actually lakes. Where you would think that it would be, you know, still frozen, they find, you know, liquid water, and this is saline water. So the newly discovered lakes are important because they act as a habitat for microbial life, and it could help scientists understand how life could exist in outer space. And that could definitely apply for some of the moons that we have in our, you know, in our galaxy. I mean, our solar system, actually, we have some ice-covered moons. So although, you know, it's nothing that was actually discovered as far as microbial life there, they're just saying there could actually be a possibility that there are, and I don't know how they'd ever find out. But I thought it was kind of interesting anyway. And, you know, what does a microbe do that far down for all these years? Because they would have existed for 120,000 years. Sounds pretty boring and dark.
And how do you get down there is a question, because I did see that story, and I wonder, you know, how do you get down to get a sample without contaminating and exposing then that lake to our atmosphere and to, you know, all of the little critters that could go down that drill hole? I wonder how they plan to do that.
Yeah, because you can actually, certainly can drill that far down without any trouble. But you're right about that, because as they're going down, how can they keep the drill bit from carrying, you know, contaminants down?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we don't want to know what's down there.
Maybe not.
Yeah. Never know what could come
spooky.
Up.
Spooky.
Through the drill hole.
Yeah. I mean, it could be some kind of little critters. Like, I haven't seen the show Life, but I kind of get the gist of, like, this little kind of thing that comes up and kills people.
It could happen. Never
that
know.
That would be awful.
That would be terrible.
If NASA drilled down there and some kind of critter came up and killed people, I'd be very upset with them.
Yeah. I mean, what do you do?
Mm-hmm. In fact,
just put a plug on it.
That's what, you know, there was news last year about hiring this planetary protection agent, and they did hire someone, and a lot of people were like, is this going to be a man in black? You know, there were a lot of jokes and speculation, and a lot of stories were generated from this, and they thought it would be like the Men in Black, you know. But of course, that's not what the job was. What the job was is to make sure that we do not contaminate other planets and vice versa, because I guess thus far we've done a very bad job of that. In fact, we've done such a bad job that if we were to find a microbe on the moon, there would probably be some scientists, and technically they would have some ground to stand on, who would say, that's probably not life from the moon. It looks so much like life from the Earth. It's probably in contamination from the Earth. And it'd be difficult for us to say otherwise. Unless it was very different than what we find on Earth.
Yeah, good point. So we could have, like, a monumental moment turn into, you know, still not actual proof. Really?
Yeah, and we've had that. So, for instance, that meteorite that was discovered when Clinton came out. Yeah, the one from Mars. And Clinton came out and said, we've discovered life elsewhere. And then it got debunked. There are still scientists who argue, no, that still could be a microbe from elsewhere. But many scientists were saying, well, we don't know that that meteorite wasn't contaminated once it got to Earth. That could be Earth life. And some also argue it doesn't even look like a biological evidence anyways, that it could be some sort of mineral or something like that. But there are some scientists who say, nope, that to them, they're convinced it is evidence of life from elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be debated.
Mm-hmm. That's what we do. We debate. People debate all day long. So, got any other news?
Well, I did poke around and I saw, you know, a couple of other things, but just not in the sightings, in the way of sightings, except, you know, I think things that we may have discussed before about the sighting in New Jersey, which is just lights in the sky.
Yeah.
I didn't see anything really out there.
Yeah. Yeah, not a whole lot of stuff on sightings, but I have something that is exciting, at least to me. So I unfortunately have not been able to have a whole lot of conversation with Lou Elizondo recently. I know he's very busy. I've had a little bit of back and forth, and we're supposed to talk some more soon. But the last time we did email back and forth, he said, check this out, we're making some good headway. And it's along the lines of what I have spoken about before, which is people are like, you know, why aren't these guys, what are they doing? Why aren't they talking to ufologists? Why aren't they doing this? Why aren't they doing that? It's because their main goal is, like Lou Elizondo said, he left the DOD because they weren't taking the UFO question serious enough. But luckily, since his news has come out in the New York Times and elsewhere, there has been some more serious thought to this and some exciting kind of progress. So my next UFO story that'll be coming out soon is going to be about what he showed me, which is this Politico story. So last week, there was a space conference, and it was in Colorado Springs. And I do mention this in my Den of Geek story that's coming out today, which it just so happens that that's where Space Command is. And U.S. Air Force, actually, Space Command does exist, if people don't know. Actually, Stargate took place in Colorado Springs under Cheyenne Mountain. Not the conspiracy Stargate stuff, but the television show with MacGyver. And that's right, because, you know, NORAD's there, and Space Command actually is headquartered just outside the gates there at Peterson Air Force Base. But there was a lot of talk about space warfare and everything. However, Politico talked to someone who advises in the National Space Council. And the National Space Council is actually an old concept that was revived by Trump to advise, you know, him on space. And one of the advisors was asked, you know, should we be talking about UFOs maybe? Or, are you guys going to talk about UFOs at this conference? And she said, no, but maybe we should. She said, essentially, if there are things buzzing around in the skies that we don't understand, then we should take a look at it. They also asked a couple other representatives who were there, some congressmen, and they said, we should be looking into this. Maybe we should have some hearings, and maybe we should be funding some sort of, this one representative, Amy Barrow, who's a Democrat, said, look, I think it's fascinating. We don't know what these phenomena are. Obviously, it's important enough to allocate some funds, and we ought to talk about what we can talk about. Wow. So it's just amazing. There's this kind of real openness to this whole idea of UFOs. And, of course, it's trying to figure out what these unidentified craft are, not necessarily with the assumption that they are extraterrestrial, but that they might be foreign. Human-developed foreign technology. However, it seems that these guys are open to the idea that it could be something else, you know, something possibly otherworldly. But what's interesting is typically, you know, there's some sort of tongue-in-cheek joke about this topic. But these are very serious people at the most serious kind of event regarding space that goes on. And they are talking about, yeah, maybe we need to talk about it. Maybe we do need to allocate some money. And that's extraordinary to me.
It is. That's really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Hey, you know, when I was poking around for a UFO story today, I came across one of these news websites that had a survey, and they basically said, do you think UFOs are a sign of alien life? And the top one was yes, and then maybe, and then no. So I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, instead of just doing my first initial click on maybe, that's what I wanted to do. I thought, well, I'm sure the yeses are really, really low. So I clicked on yes. Ends up there was like 89% said yes or something like that. And it was like only 10% said maybe. I was shocked.
What is the site?
I don't even know where the site was. I visited a whole bunch of sites.
Huh.
And it was just a regular news website, and they had a UFO story, so that was on the site.
So some regular kind of conventional mainstream news site.
Yeah. And then the no's were really low, so but it was like 17% for no or something like that, and the maybes were... I mean, I was just shocked. I thought most people would say maybe.
Mm-hmm. See, that is fascinating, and that's the topic of what we're going to be talking about for the rest of the show, is that I feel things have changed. You know,
I
there's,
do too.
There's yeah. a difference. People seem to be okay talking about it now.
Right. And who knows where that's going to lead. You know, I mean, I think what will happen, too, is we're going to start hearing about old UFO incidences that people have, you know, encountered that have kept it quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I think there may be some people that may feel like it's now time to talk about certain things.
Mm-hmm. And I know
possibly
some people, I agree with you, and I know some people will get frustrated by this, but I think it's really the case in that some people are like, oh, no, we need to check their work. We need to know everything they know. We need the files. We need to know how the videos got released from the Department of Defense. We need the files as to what, you know, their investigation included. We need to know this and that and this and that because we need to verify what they did. But I think that while that's great, and I agree that that's important, and I hope that we have access to this information at some point, I think for a lot of people, they feel like who is a bigger authority than the Department of Defense? They are a big deal. And if they say mm-hmm. they did a thorough investigation, and this is what their conclusions are, then that's good enough for me. And I think that's the difference, that a lot of people feel that way. There was a lot more talk earlier about wanting information, wanting details on this, or the other. But that's kind of faded away. But what hasn't faded away is this idea is that it's a legitimate phenomena, a legitimate mystery mm-hmm. that is worth credible discussion and credible observation or at least thought. And that's a very, very important takeaway.
Right. You know, I think some of it can harken back to the Chilean, you know, Cefaja, when they had their UFO sighting and they announced it, unfortunately, ended up being, you know, the jet heat signal from 50 miles away or whatever it was. So I think there's people that are out there that are going to say, hey, that happened. Let's be real careful and see what this is. I think that's why we're getting that type of blowback, probably.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. And that makes sense. Because Cefaja, at least in that one case, and I think in a couple cases, honestly, got mm-hmm. it wrong. They got it wrong, essentially. And that's unfortunate. But I believe, personally, the Campeche case in Mexico, if you're familiar with that, the Air Force released some stuff to Jaime Musan saying, hey, we got these weird lights. I think yeah. that they got it wrong. I think very quickly there was a researcher. I know there's a video out there I've written about, and you can go to Open Minds and you can put in Campeche and you can see Ben McGee explaining the case and kind of the debunking of the case very thoroughly. That unfortunately it was that these flames from these oil fields.
That one, yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he demonstrates that to no doubt. And even I was skeptical, just like I get with Mark D'Antonio. You know, I'm like, yeah, right. You figured it out. Sure you did. There's no way. And then he shows me what he did and how, yeah. you know, the facts and puts it all together. And you're like, ah, oh, okay, maybe you did figure it out. And that was the case here. I even was like, yeah, right, Ben. We'll see it. I'll see it when I believe it. And I was able to be there in person when he did this talk that in Vegas that you can see online on our story. And sure enough, he breaks it down and he tells it. He got it. Then I found out a Mexican researcher had already done that. But
well, I know we're almost out of time, but I thought there was actually some radar evidence on that.
No.
No. Okay.
No radar, all video. So yeah, you'll have to watch that video. Really good stuff. But yeah, unfortunately, Cefaja got it wrong, and I think you're right. That's why people want to triple check this stuff, and hopefully mm-hmm. they will be able to. Because you certainly, I don't think you know our military is above possibly getting it wrong, and or possible disinformation. You never know. I mean, on something like this, you want to triple check everything. So
right
there,
right.
You go.
And we're out of time.
We're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, Martin.
Very welcome. As always.
Thank you very much. After this break, we'll be back with Bryce Zabel, so stay tuned. Welcome back to Open Mind UFO Radio. I'm your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I am happy to welcome back to the show, Bryce Zabel.
It's my pleasure to come back. It's always fun doing this show.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So we actually did a couple minutes of the show.
They were really good minutes, and now I feel like they're undiscovered.
They were amazing minutes, but yeah. I forgot to push the record button.
Which I just want to just put this out here. I'm just thinking that in the future, you should always do that before you start. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I should write that down. Yeah. In the future, push record first.
Yeah,
but it's wonderful to have you back.
Thank you.
You reminded me, and you know, of course, before the conference was such confusion and so busy that you were just on right before the conference.
I was, but there was a lot to talk about in terms of setup. I was very excited at the time about the topic I was going to be talking about. I ended up, as you know, calling it Fear and Loathing on the Trail of the Saucers. Yeah. Because I wanted to sort of bring a new tone to the whole endeavor. We talked a little bit about that, but then also the conference was a terrific one as usual. I always learn a lot, and I always enjoy meeting people and talking. So I really had a great time. But there's never an end to what we can talk about. This is the biggest topic in the world. Mm-hmm. It's the biggest story in history, and we would be remiss if we thought we had talked it out, because we haven't.
Well, and I don't think there's a time where we've gotten together to just discuss stuff and 3 hours hasn't passed in like a heartbeat.
Although as we get older, maybe we're just repeating ourselves. I don't know. But I enjoy it. And I think that this is such a nuanced and interesting topic that the chance to discuss it with similar like-minded people is good, because you don't really say the same things. You're in an active process of investigation of your own thoughts, which is something that I've enjoyed very much about it. I've spent so much time, as most of your listeners have, thinking about this topic. What does it mean? What's really happening? What's going on in this world that would explain this phenomenon in a coherent and reasonable way? And every time I think I have my hands around that topic, the bar moves a little bit higher, and I realize I'm not quite there yet.
Mm-hmm. And I think the listeners feel the same, so I think they're really going to understand what you're saying, especially my listeners. My listeners are extraordinary. They're thinkers, and you know, and I think it's the same thing, that you're always kind of rethinking the information. And I think it's important that your mind is not set, because we're learning new things all the time.
It's the thing that's always bothered me, which is, how do we reconcile all these disparate things, whether they be alien abductions or crop circles or animal mutilations, or, you know, go on and on and on. All the aspects of the phenomenon that are out there, you say, well, they can't all be true. Or if they are true, how are they all related? That's been something I've grappled with for a long time. We tried to do it in the NBC series Dark Skies that I co-created with Brent Friedman. Our idea was to try to come up with the unified field theory of ufology. And so we tried to apply some kind of coherent philosophy to all these things. And while we, I think, succeeded on the level of a television series, a dramatic television series, I don't think I ever succeeded on the level of, in my own mind, being able to say, now I understand. Now it all makes sense, because I don't think we're there yet. And I doubt if the people who do know more about it than I do, who have seen the better pictures and the better videos and all this, I'm not so sure they have it all figured out either, but that's something we'll talk about today.
Yeah, I agree with you. And just so you listeners know, just because I forgot that Bryce was just recently on doesn't mean we're just going to ramble because I don't have anything to talk about. Right. I do.
Yes.
Because after disclosure is essentially what I want to talk about. Although, I do have a question before we get to that. But let me do that real quick. Art Bell, because you brought up Dark Skies, and that's something that is really cool. Of course, Art Bell unfortunately passed away recently, but one of the really cool things that happened, and you were on Coast to Coast for this recently, is that you were able to get him to play a role on Dark Skies, and you shared that. Hopefully everybody can go take a look at that, and you can tell them where they can watch it. But he was great. He was his acting was really good in that scene. Good.
It's very, it's kind of an amusing story. I first met Art virtually by being on his show back in 1996 during the promotion of NBC's Dark Skies. And I had never been on Coast to Coast before, and it was interesting that I got invited back to Coast to Coast because they were for the Art Bell tribute, because they were saying, "Wow, I mean, you go back to the original, the early days," and I thought, "Has it been that long?" But I guess it has. But Art and I did 3 hours. The one thing I learned about a radio show there is doing 3 hours is a long time, and it requires a lot of mental agility to be doing it at 2 a.m. Right. But I got to know him well enough that I thought, you know, he's got such a large radio audience. This is the promoter part of me, the producer part. I thought maybe we should cast Art on the show because he's bound to talk about it. And this is before Facebook and Twitter would allow me to talk about it. I thought maybe Art with his audience could talk about it. So Brent and I cast him in a scene that we had in, I believe it was our 8th or 10th episode. It was called We Shall Overcome, which was about the civil rights movement. And we cast Art in a scene that took place at Majestic 12, which, as your listeners know, is possibly the UFO cover-up organization. So we thought the most delicious and subversive irony that we could possibly put out there would be to cast Art Bell as a member of Majestic 12 in charge of keeping the UFO cover-up intact. Then we thought, well, then who is he going to play? And so we thought, let's go all the way, in for a penny, in for a pound, let's be really subversive. So we cast him to play the CBS founder and president, William S. Paley. So Art is in this scene in Dark Skies playing William S. Paley, talking about the UFO cover-up. And if you want to see it, there are two places you could see it. It's still on the website at Coast to Coast, I believe, under the Art Bell tribute. And if you can't find it there, or if you just want to see more Dark Skies clips, you can come to my own site on YouTube, which I guess you just go to YouTube and Google my name, Bryce Zabel, and you'll see it. And we have a whole playlist of Dark Skies clips. But among them is the one where Art Bell is on, and I think it is our most popular Dark Skies clip, because why wouldn't it be?
Yeah.
Art Bell was a great guy. And here's a quick little thing about Art's appearance. He showed up that day, and you know, look, this is a guy who, like you, Alejandro, was pretty comfortable in front of a microphone, and yet he had two lines in this Majestic 12 thing, and he was a little bit nervous about them. And not only was he nervous, but I had asked him to shave his mustache off because William S. Paley did not have a mustache in 1964 when the scene took place. And so Art had shaved his mustache off, and it's sort of like, I think he felt like his power had been taken from him, right? Which a man usually feels when you take your facial hair off and you see this other guy staring back at you, and you get a little shaken. So I was a little concerned, and so was Brent. We were like, is this guy going to be up for the challenge? Is he going to even remember his two lines? Art, like all of those of us who are in this business, knows how to stand and deliver. So we start rolling the cameras. Art is there with both his lines. He's fantastic. I think your listeners will agree if they take a look at him. He did a great job. So just all I can say is rest in peace to Art Bell. He started something that we're all standing together and appreciating even today. And much of what's going on in the world of ufology owes a lot to Art Bell for shining a little light on it. So I hope he's learned what the next passage is all about. And if he's able to, I hope he sends us a message and tells us so that we can know.
You know, and I agree, he did a great job. In fact, after watching that scene, I wanted more. And I thought, man, it's too bad he didn't do more acting. I thought he did a great job.
He did a great job. And in fact, we brought William S. Paley back in a later episode. And I think he was literally unavailable to do it. He was just too busy to come in from Pahrump to play William S. Paley, which is too bad, because it's always good to have. Anyway, I think you're right. He had appeared on various things. I think, though, the Dark Skies thing was his first big network acting gig. Hmm. We didn't pay him hardly anything, of course, but we still appreciate it.
Of course. You know, it's funny, too, now that I'm thinking about it. Karen, of course, which the listeners know is my girlfriend, is off right now watching George Norrie, who's in town, who was, of course, Art Bell's successor. So, and the reason I bring that up and what made me think about it is I thought, you know, how grueling it is to have to be responsible to do a show every night.
It's especially a long show like that. It's something. And I think for the Art Bells and the George Norrie's of the world, they've adjusted their biorhythms over time to accommodate that. When you're a guest on his show and you're basically waiting up all night long, so you're either over-caffeinated for late at night or you're under-caffeinated for later at night. You're not quite 100% on your game. Here's what I found. I've done the coast-to-coast thing a few times, and hour one usually goes pretty good because you're on your toes, you're in your fighting weight. Hour two, you're like totally ready to rock and roll because you're the adrenaline is flowing and everything. And somehow in hour three, you just kind of lose your edge. And fortunately, that's when they do the phone call-ins. Mm-hmm. So that's good. I don't know why I'm going to tell you this, but it just amuses me. In hour three once with George Knapp, who is the other George on Coast to Coast, we're taking a call from a listener, and in the middle of the call, we hear the toilet flush. And George Knapp said that that was the first time that had ever happened to him in live radio. And it was certainly my first time.
Whose end was that on? His or yours?
No, it wasn't George. No, George Knapp. George Knapp did not flush the toilet. The caller flushed the toilet.
Oh, okay.
Nor did I flush the toilet. It was the caller.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. That's a good one. So moving on to the next topic then is after disclosure. So
yes.
You wrote a book. And the reason I bring this up, and I think especially my listeners, some will agree, and you probably, is that we're kind of a little bit in a kind of minor after disclosure moment. But you wrote a book called AD, After Disclosure. Some listeners may be aware, some not. And this was written with Richard Dolan.
You bet.
What year did it come out?
Okay, well, here's the history of AD, After Disclosure. I met Richard Dolan in the early 2010s because I had read his two books, wonderful books, UFOs and the National Security State. And I thought he was the best and most truthful historian on the topic, and I wanted to meet him, and we sort of hit it off, and I think what caught our imagination was the idea there's probably been 5,000 books and maybe more written about UFOs, and all 5,000 of them seem to be trying to prove that UFOs are real. In other words, they're almost written for the skeptic who's reading them, trying to say, well, here's the evidence marshaled to tell you why you should believe that we're not crazy and that UFOs are real.
Mm-hmm.
And what caught us was, what if we write the book that nobody's seen before, which is the one that assumes UFOs are real and that the reader knows they're real and it's a fact that they're real, but what's going to happen when the entire world admits it? Okay. So the first book, the book originally came out in I believe 2011 from Richard's Keyhole Publishing. And interestingly enough, this will tell you something, that when we titled it, it was called AD, After Disclosure, The People's Guide to Life After Contact. It was a hardcover. And then a couple of years later, it got picked up by Courier Press and they put out a paperback version. And they changed the title to AD, After Disclosure, When the Government Finally Admits the Truth About Alien Contact. So they felt we were a little too obtuse and wanted to make it a little more clear. But here's the thing. In order to talk about disclosure, there's so many things to think about, and it's such a nuanced topic. But it starts from, what is disclosure? So one of the things that I always say when I'm trying to define what disclosure is would be this. When somebody in a position of power, could be a president, could be a pope, could be the premier of Russia, could be anybody who's in a position of power, starts that official conversation that these things are real and admits that at least some of the things that are flying around in our skies right now and have been for a long time are from someplace that isn't here and they're being flown by somebody that isn't us. In other words, when we admit publicly that these things aren't ours, but they belong to that other group, whoever is visiting us. And that's going to be a radical thing. Now, why did we call it AD? That's the other part of the equation. We felt that the acknowledgement of another reality, another a visitation by aliens or ultra-dimensional, whatever, whoever the others are. We called them the others. We felt that when that happened, it was just as big a moment as the birth of Jesus. It's a big moment. So we wanted to say the calendar almost starts over again at that point. Mm-hmm. That we are currently in what I would call the final days, the waning days of the BC world. BC meaning in this case before confirmation. And we are soon to cross over into the world of AD, which will be after disclosure, and that people are going to start to reference time in a different way after that. So in our world, there's AD plus one day, AD plus 1 week, AD plus 1 month, that there are going to be changes to our society that are going to roll out. And the question is, are they predictable? Some are. Or are they unpredictable? And some are that as well. And so Richard and I fell down that rabbit hole and spent an entire book trying to dissect that new world, that brave new world, and what it would look like.
Mm-hmm. Which is exciting. It's a great book. If you haven't read it, definitely get it. It's a lot of fun because I can tell the voices since I know you guys.
Right.
And for those of you who have read Dolan, you'll be able to tell it because it's much more historical. And then your parts are real exciting and more, you know, thinking like your other books. Well, what if?
Right. It's interesting you say that, though, mm-hmm. Alejandro, because what Richard and I did was we wrote on top of each other. Well, one of us would have a chapter, and then we'd turn it over to the other guy, and he would write on top. And there are sections of it where I'll read it today, and I'll go, I don't know if I wrote that or Richard wrote it, because there's enough of me in that paragraph and to remind me that it's me, but there's enough of him in it to remind me it's him.
Mm-hmm.
But it is true. What we wanted to do was capture the entire future of humanity, if you will. And that required two things. It required the voice, the rational voice of the historian with the knowledge that Richard Dolan has. But it also required a sense of being able to just cut loose the cords that bind us to our common sense, what people know, and instead start to look to the future and say, well, what will really happen? And that's sort of, because I'm a dramatist, that's where I come in. And by the way, you mentioned the what if. I'm just going to put this one shameless plug in. What you're talking about is lately I've got a series of books out that are called the Breakpoint series, where I've been looking into fascinating what ifs from our time. The first was Surrounded by Enemies, What If Kennedy Survived Dallas? And the one that I have out right now is called Once There Was a Way, What If the Beatles Stayed Together, which has nothing to do with UFOs, except that my own publisher on the What If books really looked at AD as another What If book.
Mm.
And in that respect, you could really say it is a What If book. What if the world finally owns up to the fact that the people who think UFOs are real aren't crazy?
Mm-hmm.
What if that happens? And I think we're very close to that moment.
Yeah. So given your definition, someone in power, of course, you're talking about someone at a very high level. But still, what we have is at least closer to that than we've ever had in the United States, where we have someone who worked at the Pentagon for a period of time working for a funded program and then kind of working guerrilla in a way. And I want to remind people, because especially John Greenwald from the Black Vault and I have been debating this quite a bit lately, is that when you're someone in intelligence, and you can kind of see this if you watch those shows about the CIA guys, they're looking at data that has already been created. They're just looking at it from a different perspective to try to glean from all of the data out there, understand something. In this case, trying to understand situations in where aircraft that performed in ways that we can't understand, that are unidentified. And so Elizondo feels that they have found cases where that has been the case. So that's how you can do it, unfunded. You go look at the data that's already out there. So we've got this guy who worked for the Pentagon, and he says, we essentially what you said, that we have a real phenomena. We have real craft. We don't know whose they are, but we don't believe they're ours because they outperform ours. And that's kind of a disclosure.
It is disclosure. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think it's very clear the calendar clickover of disclosure means it has to be on a level where the entire world at the same time comes to disclosure. Mm-hmm. There's no question that most of your viewers or listeners rather are already in the post-disclosure environment because they already know that this is real. You know it's real. I know it's real. We're all living in the AD. We're living in the post-disclosure world to us personally, but the world isn't yet acting mm-hmm. like we've disclosed this reality. But based on what you just said, and those the revelations, the New York Times, Tom DeLonge's group, that kind of thing, we are getting closer and closer. But I'm reminded that we should have a little bit of humility about this. I'm sitting in, by the way, for those of you who are listening, I'm sitting in Alejandro's podcast kingdom, and I'm surrounded by his collection of UFO books, which rivals my collection of UFO books, and you have some that go back to the beginning, right? And those include Donald Kehoe's wonderful books mm-hmm. that were written in the 50s. I have those myself, but let's remind ourselves that even in the early 50s, when Donald Kehoe was writing his wonderful books, he kept talking about the Silence Group, all right, which were, call it Majestic 12, call it the Secret Keepers, I don't know what you want to call it, but he called it the Silence Group. And in most of his books, as I remember them, he talks about how disclosure, he didn't call it disclosure, but he called it the end of the secret, was imminent. Okay, well, that was, by my count, almost 70 years ago. And so people have been predicting the imminent end of the UFO cover-up since then, and we haven't had it yet. But I do think the situation seems to have been moved forward by recent events, and we have the greatest reason for optimism that this new world is rushing at us faster than most of us would ever believe.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it was interesting. In fact, talking with George Knapp recently, very recently, he wrote to me and he said something along the lines of how shocked he was, how excited he was about what's happened so far. He never thought we would make it this far, that this sort of, even this level of disclosure would happen during his lifetime.
You know, and I feel the same way. I'm sure you do too. Look, I'm not as young as I used to be. I guess that's true of all of the people who are listening. I still would like to see this happen in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And if you'd asked me 15 years ago, if that was possible, and I was a younger man 15 years ago, so I had more reason for optimism, I still would have said, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Now I'm an older man compared to that person, and yet I'm more optimistic. The facts on the ground, if you will, seem to indicate that there is strong movement toward owning up to this. And part of the reason is this vast new technology that's surrounding us. Look at the fact that you and I are reaching so many people, but we're sitting in your office doing a podcast. Think of all the technology that can be aimed at the skies right now by regular people, mm-hmm. not just by the military, not just by the government. Think of the ways of communication. Think of the ways of research that people are able to do on their own. They don't need official people who have better toys to do it. They have their own great toys. So we are preparing to disclose this reality to ourselves. That's part of what's happening in this podcast. That's part of what's happening with the New York Times report and the released videos. It's starting to happen. And it says, my co-writer of AD, Richard Dolan, said, we are preparing to leap into their world. Mm-hmm. Up until now, the others have sort of owned their world, and it was up to them when we would know they were here. And now it's kind of up to us. Mm. And I think that is a big, big game changer.
All right. Well, it is time for a break. For those of you listening with KGRA, you're going to hear some commercials. So please listen closely and patronize these great people who keep all of us on the air. For those of you listening to the podcast, you'll hear a short musical interlude. And we'll be right back with Bryce Zabel. Thank you. Welcome back to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and we are here with Bryce Zabel, one of the authors of AD After Disclosure, along with Richard Dolan. So I want to ask then, in relation to your book, do you see, because you guys put a lot of thought to what would happen, with what has happened since Elizondo has come out and told his story, I think the changes are subtle, but do you see changes, and do you see anything maybe that you even touched upon in your book coming to fruition?
Absolutely. There are a couple of ways that disclosure can come about. I don't think Richard and I ever meant to set ourselves up as the grand poobahs of disclosure who would tell you exactly how it would happen. So what we intended to do was ask questions and to make suggestions about scenarios. There are two basic ways that it can start. It can start because there's some incontrovertible event that gains the attention of the media worldwide. That would be the equivalent, say, of a Phoenix Light event, only it happens during broad daylight, and there's not any question about whether it's flares or anything else. It's simply seen by 20 or 30,000 people at the same time, and they all take pictures, and the news media covers it, and it's on the cover of Time and Newsweek, and everybody's talking about it. So that could happen. I mean, that could happen, and that would basically pop us into a post-disclosure world within 7 to 10 days, I would tend to imagine, in such an event. Now, it hasn't happened yet, but there's the possibility. Then the other way it happens is what I guess we would call the avalanche, that there's smaller things that lead to slightly bigger things that lead to even bigger things, and it starts to pick up the momentum of a snowball rolling down the hill. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon, that little snowball is now a giant avalanche of disclosure coming down at you. And that seems to be what we're following now. It doesn't mean that some event won't happen, because we don't control such an event. But we do see the patterns. Obviously, somebody on the inside of the government has said, let's release some videos. We also have a more open acknowledgement of it between Luis Elizondo and, of course, you know, even Senator Harry Reid talking about it. We had Hillary Clinton and John Podesta talking about it in the presidential campaign. Had they won, they would be talking about it right now. We see Jimmy Kimmel interviewing former presidents and talking about it. There's a whole acceptance of the topic that did not exist a few years ago. And that is really a harbinger of change, I think, that we have to think about. So there are a lot of reasons and a lot of things that we thought about, and it does seem like we're moving closer and closer. The one thing I will say also, though, is because essentially disclosure is about the end of secrecy. It's the end of whether it's an official nefarious Karen's conspiratorial cover up or it's something else, the jury may be out on. But it is when things are publicized. One of the things we can be very clear on, and I don't think there's a lot of facts that we all agree on about ufology right now, but I will tell you that I thought a lot about it. I think there is one fact that we can agree on right now, and that is that the people who are involved in it, the others and the humans, agree on one thing, that it should be a secret, because each side has had the ability to end this cover-up, to end this secrecy from the get-go. If you think about it, we as humans could have the president walk out tomorrow. And say, oh, by the way, that UFO stuff is real. And for those of you in the media, here are hard drives with 3 terabytes of video and photos. And so we could end it right now. And the others could literally land on the White House lawn, or they could land in Central Park, or they could do a Phoenix Lights, roundabout. But they haven't done it. Mm-hmm. Right. So we can state for a fact that both sides agree it should be a secret. Now, that raises a lot of questions. Why do both sides agree it should be a secret? Did they agree together it should be a secret, or have they agreed independently it should be a secret? We just know that they think So far, it should be a secret, but now we're starting to see more moves on our side that would say we're willing to talk about it a little more openly. And we're also seeing, I think, more public events where whoever these others are, if you take a look at the videos that were released, seem to be allowing themselves to be seen.
What's interesting, I think you're 100% right on that. And I think we always forget that part because, you know, everybody is, why doesn't the government disclose? Why doesn't the government tell us what's going on? When at the same time, and there's another party involved, and they don't seem, at least according to what Elizondo's discovered, at least shared and what's in those videos, to have disclosed much to the government. And that, you know, we've had those cases even in Blue Book where they're kind of teasing. They right. fly around, they show themselves, we scramble our jets. This happened then, and it's happening now. They outclass our jets. They fly around, take off. Our jets can't do anything about it. And that's it. No mass, you know, exposing themselves to large masses of people during the day like you're talking about, which they could do. Instead, it's this very subtle kind of, hey, look at me, I'm out of here type of thing.
It raises so many questions. A lot of it is, one of the reasons that it was a semi-daring thing to write AD after disclosure is that it's all speculation.
Yeah.
By definition, it was speculation. And you know, a lot of people want to deal in just the facts, but we also felt it is time to talk about it. We may be, if you think about it, let's go back to some analogs for where we are. If we came across a new tribe in the jungles of Borneo that we wanted to study, and they'd never, ever seen advanced technology of any kind, we wouldn't just show up. Right. We would observe them from a distance and then we might observe them a little closer.
Maybe and even fly a drone over there.
We might fly a drone. Exactly. And slowly we might acclimate them until one day we might show up and then another day a lot of us might show up and we might have a conversation. We just don't know. The only analogs we have are ones that we've had. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, in our human history, every time an advanced technology civilization, rather, has met with a less advanced civilization, the more advanced one pretty much wins, and the less advanced ones are either absorbed or eradicated. So let's hope that's not what's happening with us.
Right.
We don't have the facts.
Mm-hmm.
But I think those of us who favor full-on disclosure of some kind have come to the conclusion that whatever the facts on the ground or in the air are, we would like them.
Mm-hmm.
I've always believed yeah. that all of us together are smarter than any one of us.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't seem right that a small and elite group of humans have been able to study this phenomenon and then make fun of the rest of us for daring to know that it's real. We should all be part of it because we can all collaborate and try to get some answers. And believe me, I think we need some answers.
Mm-hmm. Now, along the lines of what you're talking about, the scenario where it's kind of this slow avalanche and these little things like little boulders start rolling down the hill. That boulder's been rolling, and I haven't had a lot of contact with Elizondo lately, but in my last one, he forwarded me these quotes, and I did some research, and I found them, and I hadn't seen these, and I don't know of anybody in this field who had saw these, and I'm going to post a story about this. But essentially, this was a story last week. There was this big space meeting in Colorado Springs,
right.
and there were a lot of defense people and otherwise, and I even used a quote actually in a story that I'm going to have in Den of Geek coming up in the next couple of days, where they talked about the major conversation was about space warfare and this sort of thing. But when you went down in this long kind of story on Politico that was about different notes about this, there was a conversation from one of the advisors to Trump's new National Space Council. It's actually something that existed before that he rebooted. And she was talking to a couple of politicians, and the reporter asked, are you guys going to be talking about UFOs?
at this conference, given, you know, the New York Times story in December. And she said, no, but we probably should. I think it would be appropriate. And they asked, talked to a couple of other politicians, and they said, we would be open to hearings at Congress to hear more about this, because we think if there are something, you know, flying around that we don't know what it is, we should be talking about it. Maybe we should be spending some money on it. That to me was jaw dropping.
It's we're on the verge of great change, and you've sort of highlighted the one major issue. Before, we've all often taken the position that somebody, you know, the people who are in the know have taken the position that they're the ones that should be studying it. I think the change is we are now starting on a more open level for people who ordinarily wouldn't be talking about this matter to start talking about it and saying, yeah, we should really get to the bottom of it. And the biggest open question in the field right now is, are there, in fact, people who know chapter and verse of what is really going on? Or are there people who have been studying this for 70 plus years and maybe a lot longer who don't really know what's going on even after all this study? In other words, where are we in the behind the scenes process of studying this? And how can we move our investigation from an inside the beltway or inside the cover-up investigation and bring it out into the light of day and let all of us look at it? And there are likely to be some really astonishing surprises. It may very well be there is a darn good reason why they haven't told us about it. I don't know what that is. I don't know that I support any reason as being good enough to ridicule people who are aware of this phenomena's reality. But there probably are some provocative things we're going to learn, and some of them may not be good.
Oh, I just thought of something.
What?
What if this is their test? Their test is, you know, a government is not ready to join or for us to converse with. I'm speaking from the other's perspective. If they're not open with their public, with their people.
Interesting.
And by us showing ourselves to their government and showing, look, we can outclass you, we're better than you, we've got technology that you would love to have, are they going to share that with their public? And thus far, they have not.
It's fascinating. And the very statement you just made makes you, it raises a question, which is that's a good way humans may think of this, but we're dealing with a potential alien or ultra-dimensional or whatever, another intelligence besides ours is thinking about us. We don't have any experience yet as to how another intelligence may think about such matters. We just don't know.
Which makes me think of something else, because what you're talking about is in order to, that their thinking is so far out of the box, it's going to be difficult for us to make any assumptions about their motivations, their technology, anything, which I agree with 100%. What's funny about that is organizations such as SETI, which are kind of the go-to people, their thinking is so in the box. It's completely inside the box. And they've got to be doing the technologies that we used decades ago.
I'm not a SETI. As a young kid, I used to think SETI was an exciting concept. But the more that I've learned, I think it's just a sham. These people who have been looking historically into SETI and singing its praises and then poo-pooing UFOs just really irritate me, because they're willing to believe that the universe is teeming with life, but it couldn't possibly be here. When in reality, the evidence suggests that that's wrong, that this other reality, this other life form, this other is here right now, and we should be looking at that. So it's kind of ironic you bring it up, but in going back to Dark Skies for a moment, one of the characters we made in the series was Carl Sagan. And we had Carl Sagan basically being brought into the cover-up because he was willing to trade getting knowledge of what was really going on in order to become the public shill for telling people, again, as Carl said, there's billions and billions of planets out there, and life is teeming out there in the universe, but they couldn't be here. And I just don't buy it. I don't think it makes sense. By the way, can I do a shameless update on where AD stands right now?
Please do. It's not shameless. It pertains to the conversation, and it's very exciting.
All right. So one of the, you know, as your listeners know, I'm not so much a I'm a semi expert at best on UFOs. I know a few things, but primarily
you know quite a bit.
Okay, well, thank you. But I'm a writer producer in Hollywood, and I do television shows and films. And so one of the reasons that I've always been excited about AD after disclosure is it's the intellectual property. It's the underlying rights, if you will, to what could become a very exciting television series. So I reached out originally to Richard Dolan because of his vast expertise to try to craft this IP, this book, if you will. And now, just recently, I've reached out to my Dark Skies co-creator, Brent Friedman, who is one of the great minds of storytelling. He's just a brilliant storyteller. And we have been working on taking the book that Dolan and I wrote and developing it into a new television series. And I'm not going to tell the details of the of what we're doing yet, because we're still trying to figure out exactly how to tell it. But our plan is to get this out into the market, or at least pitching it in the market in the next, within 6 months and maybe earlier, with an idea to trying to tell a longer story, a more dramatic story. And frankly, the reason we're doing it is that if we don't get it done quick, I think real events are going to overtake
it. Do it.
I think that we are, again, given what I said about Donald Kehoe and people predicting this going back 70 years or 50 years or 60 years, I still do believe we are on the precipice of this happening. And I would now put the odds at 50-50 over the next 5 years. So I really think we are living in exciting times. And the thing that I would frankly urge any listeners to do is, for a long time, we've all been led to believe that, as I've often said, I think people that talk about UFOs publicly are often treated like the drunk uncle at the wedding party or whatever. And I think it's time for us to move beyond that. So for those of us who actually know that this is a real issue and a real phenomenon, it's time for us to take a more public profile and to speak up in places to people who we wouldn't ordinarily talk to about.
Yeah, that reminds me of because I was thinking of, scenes like that would be in there and in your show. And I don't know that these are going to be scenes in your show, and I apologize.
If they're good, I'm going to take them,
okay,
trust me.
Do it.
Yeah.
Because it made me think of, Nick Pope got really excited. He even spoke at the UFO Congress about how he was part of this Royal Science conference in space. And he was there, and behind the scenes, many of the scientists were willing to share their UFO stories, talk about UFOs, but they even said to him, there's no way I want to talk publicly about this sort of thing. Here we come, post-December, post this New York Times story, and at a similar sort of space conference, not only do we have some people talking about this with a reporter and willing to talk about it, these are people who can create some sort of action,
right,
that can something actionable may happen from what they're doing, and they're feeling more empowered because of what's happened. So that's to your point. Things are moving and changing, and it's really exciting.
I think the number one way that we accelerate disclosure and accelerate this brave new world is to normalize discussion of UFO reality. And by that I mean, for 70 years, the powers that be have made derision and ridicule and denial the way that we keep this from being talked about too much. The more we normalize it, the more we're willing to speak to friends, neighbors, coworkers in a normal and yet forthright way about this. It normalizes it so that other people can talk about it. So if you've had an experience or a sighting, you should talk about it. If you just have a belief that it's time for it to be more more common, talk about it. If you read the New York Times article, send it to your friends. Normalize the conversation about what's going on with UFOs. And you'll be surprised. How fast did the Berlin Wall fall? Very fast. Mm-hmm. How fast did we go from Harvey Weinstein to the Me Too movement? How fast did we go from the shooting in Florida to the Never Again movement? And the answer is almost overnight.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So if the conditions are right, this thing could break out in a heartbeat. And your role, if you're listening right now and you want to be a part of that, is don't hide your feelings. Just make them more normal. Talk about them. Don't be crazy. Don't be angry. Just be normal and conversational and speak to people about it. And that's how the wall of secrecy is going to fall.
Mm-hmm. This is a great point to end on.
All right.
Thank you so much. We're
My
already
pleasure.
Out of time. The time flies. So now's your time to plug. Like, where can people go to find out more about your books and what you're
Absolutely. Listen, I appreciate that. I'm still promoting my Beatles book because I do love it. And people can go to whatifbeatles.com to see that. We are working on the After Disclosure thing. That will soon be at afterdisclosure.com, but it's not there right now. If people just want to know what's going on with me, they can go to brycezabel.com. That's B-R-Y-C-E-Z-A-B-E-L. And I hope people do because I love the conversation.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much to Bryce Zabel for joining us once again. It's always awesome to have him back on the show. He's so much fun. His energy is so great. He's an out-of-the-box thinker. He's always thinking about how to present this credible information in a way that is really going to grasp an audience. Of course, he's fictionalizing a lot of this stuff, but it's often, stuff that is actually pulled from the research. And as you can tell, he says, I'm no ufologist, but you know what? He knows a lot more. He knows a lot more than a lot of the so-called ufologists that I do know. So I certainly would, if you had to say, is Bryce Zabel a ufologist? I'd say, yes, he is. So, I mean, even though he had spoken with us recently, I thought, you know, he helped write this book, AD, and he's such an out-of-the-box kind of thinker. I think that he's going to have some really interesting things to say about what feels like this kind of post-AD kind of world. Things are changing. You can feel it. And I mean, in the conversation, in the story I'll be writing that you need to look out for soon, these politicians talking about actually, you know, having some sort of program related to UFOs, kind of rebooting something. I mean, the revelation that there was a program at all is just shocking, let alone people actually taking it seriously at such a high level in the government about rebooting a program like that. It's extraordinary. These are extraordinary times. So thank you so much for joining me, Bryce. It was a very incredible discussion. Please do check out everything he's up to. Some very cool stuff. From the last show, you know he's working on a Betty and Barney Hill movie. He's working on a movie that kind of highlights the work of Stanton Friedman and Don Schmidt called Magic Man or something similar to that. I think that's a working title. And now we've got this show based on the book AD, which I think would be so interesting. I didn't know that either when I invited him back to the show. So that's a scoop for the show and an exciting one at that. But I also want to remind you, go check out UFOCongress.com. Lots of cool stuff there. We've got lots of new videos up at the video site there. And watch the store. There are new products like mugs and really cool stuff. So UFOCongress.com, check that out. And all of the news that Martin and I talked about, you can find at openminds.tv. Of course, I'm posting new stuff there daily. We still have daily headlines, even though we don't have as many stories as we used to. But before we go, I want to thank Caleb Higgs for the opening and close music, Systematics for the bumper music, and of course, as always, I want to thank the most important people. Don't I kiss your butt so much? But I love to do it because I think my listeners are awesome and they deserve it. So thank you so much for joining me once again. Until next time, adios, muchachos.